listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Well, you heard the man with the golden pipes. I'm Bernie Frado. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. So go to geico.com for a free rate quote. This is the weekend edition of Straight Out of Vegas, and I'm joined in studio by Steve Fezzik, the only two-time winner of the prestigious Hilton, now Westgate Super Contest. What a day. So much to get to, so little time. It's been a raucous first day of wild card NFL games. We've had an overtime contest. We've now had the, it's official, the defending champ has been knocked out. I'm sure Rob Parker is dancing somewhere. We'll talk about that next week. What did we learn? What can we use going forward? And by the way, there's all kinds of other stuff happening we want to talk about tonight. We enter a new decade. What's the latest on nationwide legalized sports betting? We'll have that for you. Have an update. What were some of the most memorable sports book results of last year, and how do they affect the bettor on a psychological basis? Fess is going to address that, so as he would say, you don't end up on tilt. He's got a great analogy. We're going to reflect on these things. And by the way, while we're at it, in the last decade, who were the least most profitable? That's not English. Let me try that again in English. Who were the most profitable and the least profitable teams against the spread in the last decade? Some of them might surprise you, and there's a context to this because it has to do with the essence of sports handicapping. Sometimes your top-tier teams don't always cash your tickets. We're going to talk about that as well. So we're ready for takeoff now. Put your seat backs forward, your tray tables upright. As they say back in Hibbing, Minnesota, it's going to be lit. This is Straight Out of Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. Fez, let's not bury the lead. The champ has been knocked out, the defending champ. As Pete Rose once said, coaching football is like driving a stagecoach. Without the horses, you're not going forward. Anybody could see this. The last 9 weeks when the Pats were 4-5, the trend line was going in the wrong direction. They had simply emptied the tank. There's a reason the Pats, Fez, their offense ranked last among playoff teams. But be that as it may, it was still scary for some people to go against Tom Brady. 30 career playoff wins, 20-3 straight up at home. 46 touchdowns, 18 interceptions in the playoffs. And also, let's remember that he was facing Ryan Tannehill, who was 0-4 in Foxborough in his career. And Tannehill was part of a wild card weekend trend having to do with quarterbacks making their debut as starters in the playoffs. Josh Allen, Ryan Tannehill, Carson Wentz. A daunting statistic. Since 2002, Fez, 44 quarterbacks were first-time starters in the playoffs, 14-30 straight up, 12-31 and one against the number, and has rode underdogs, 3-11 straight up, 4-10 against the spread. But Ryan Tannehill and the Tennessee Titans and Mike Vrabel, they will be the team advancing next week heading to Baltimore.
Yeah, and the New England Patriots, you nailed it. Their offense really, by the end of the year, was one of the worst offenses of all the playoff teams. If you took the year-long statistics, certainly they were much better than Buffalo and some other teams. But if you just looked at Brady's last seven games coming into the playoffs, six of those last seven games, he had stats that were well below average. Frankly, this is a team that was leaking oil. And when Edelman was not 100%, this team was having all kinds of trouble moving the ball, just too much pressure on that New England defense, which was great the first half of the year, but was only good the second half of the year.
No, you're spot on. It was the defense that basically carried them, especially at home, their turnover differential and their average margin of victory. Their defense was the reason they were where they were. One of the things I like to do, I did this last year when I was doing this show, is write down the keys to the game before the game was played and see how it played out. And I wrote this down this morning. Key to the Titans, run the ball, eat clock, finish the drives with touchdowns, and keep the Pats' offense off the field. Forget Hurricane Henry. The real Hurricane was Derrick Henry. Hats off to Derrick Henry and his 182 yards today.
Yeah, so Derrick Henry, the Titans did a clever thing, I think. Back in Week 16, they had a game that was not critical when they were playing the Saints at home, and they sat Derrick Henry. He had the hamstring issue, and because of that, Derrick Henry looked a whole lot better week 17 running all over Houston. Now, I think the Titans did a foolish thing running him 30-plus times to get the rushing title. I would not have done that. But nevertheless, 2 weeks ago, having the week off completely really helped Derrick Henry, and he was a beast again today. Now, we'll see how he holds up in the playoffs. This is back-to-back games now where Derrick Henry has rushed for over 30 rushes. So we'll see if he still has that explosiveness by the end of the playoffs. But let's face it, probably Tennessee has one more game, so he probably can go in all in one more time in the Baltimore game.
If you're scoring at home, and I hope you are, Tennessee heads to Baltimore next week. The Ravens currently a 10-point favorite. One final thing about the Pats-Titans game today. It sort of came down to, as well, which quarterback do you trust? Now, these are some funny numbers because in 2019, I want to give Ryan Tannehill some credit because in the first six games, Marcus Mariota was averaging 16.8 points a game. He got benched. Ryan Tannehill comes in. They average 30.4 a game. He has a 71% completion percentage, 9.6 yards per attempt. That's significant for a quarterback. Ryan Tannehill, 9.6 yards per attempt. Compare that to Brady, who's only 6.6. Tannehill, a 117 passer rating in his 10 weeks. Tennessee, give them some credit. Do I think this is the end of the regime for New England? I'm not so sure. I have a feeling Brady might be back, but let's not spend much time on that today. As you look ahead to Baltimore, we'll handicap this. Look, I think 10's a lot of points. We'll see. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think it's that many points, frankly. Let me make a case for why it's not that many points. Over the course of the year, Tennessee outscored their opponents on average by about 4 points per game. Pretty good. Pretty good team. Obviously, they were playing at a higher level at the end of the year. Baltimore outscored their opponents by 15.5 points per game. That is just incredibly good. So Baltimore was an 11 points better team over the course of the year than Tennessee. And you can say, well, Tennessee got better over the course of the year. Well, I can come over the top and say, hey, Baltimore got better also. Baltimore's defense, oh, yeah. They didn't have their cornerbacks. They got Jimmy Smith back. You know, they had the trade for Peters, and that defense really gelled from a bottom 10 defense to a top 10 defense. So, no, I don't think 10's light at all.
Fair enough. That's interesting. One of the things I wrote down today, does experience matter heading into today's game? Cumulatively, the Tennessee Titans, their roster had players who'd appeared in 79 total playoff games. The Patriots, 377 playoff games. Experience didn't matter today, and I'll tell you, Tennessee got a lot of good experience. This is what happens when you've got an offense that ranks last among playoff teams, and they're averaging 5.2 yards a play. That's last. They're only rushing 3.8 yards per play. That's last. Red zone percentage, touchdown percentage, 50%. That's last in all playoff teams. That's why the Patriots are going home. They're last, they're last and best. Red zone scoring chance was with 3 minutes to go with first and goal on the 2-yard line in the first half, and they didn't convert.
And think about this, Bernie. Over the years, this is an automatic touchdown because of the Brady sneak, and for whatever reason, unable or unwilling to put Brady into a dog pile there with a sneak for a touchdown. And one thing about the Patriots' decline, I think we got to mention Edelman. The last two games, Edelman only got 3 catches in the loss to the Dolphins. He only got 3 catches last night. He was held under 30 yards in both of those games. He clearly was ailing with multiple injuries, and he dropped a key pass. If he catches that, I think New England wins this game. So with Edelman being compromised, that was a big reason why the Patriot dynasty ended.
And I just think it wasn't in the cards. The trend line the last few weeks was such. When they couldn't stop Miami in that final drive last night, all they were playing for was home field advantage, for crying out loud. This is a team they'd beaten the Patriots had beaten 43-0 back in week two. Let's move ahead. A couple of bits of business before we talk about Buffalo and Houston and look ahead. What do we learn from that game? What do we learn as Houston will head to Kansas City next week? One of the hot topics that you're going to see more and more mainstream is the legalization of betting nationwide. When PASPA was overturned in May 18th of 2018, Fez, I believe you spoke at a conference. You can talk about that in a second. I just want to give an update because the good people of Michigan, on December 11th, the final day of the year for the Michigan State Legislature, they passed a bill that legalized sports betting, and 9 days later, the governor, Gretchen Whitmer, signed it into law. And in February, Michigan plans to have full mobile wagering within the state. Good for them.
Yeah, and I've been a participant at the G2E gaming seminar. It's the biggest gambling seminar in the world. It's held in Las Vegas annually. I've been there the last 2 years. The number one topic, Bernie, the number one topic is integrity in sports and in sports betting. With all this legalization, the biggest concern is to avoid a scandal. Make sure all the games are being dealt fairly. That was a recurring theme across the board in all these sessions.
And as we look ahead to 2020, there are about 9 states on the docket that project legalized betting. That doesn't mean they'll be up and running, but they project to have it ratified. And we'll have some fun with this over the next few months. We've had Rob Misha on many times. He's an expert in this. There are about 13 states that'll probably never have it. Some of them have funny stories. One of them, including Vermont, I joked with Arnie Spanier about this last week. But PASPA, the Professional Amateur Sports Protection Act of 1992, when it was overturned May last year, changed everything. We're going to keep you posted as states come on board and as other states consider it and which states might never have it. So as you listen across the country, you'll know if your state, where they stand. One of the things, Fez, that I think was overdone this past week and various, talking head outlets had to do with looking back over the past decade and talking about memorable events and superlatives. Well, in the world of betting, I decided to do a little research, and of the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, NHL, college football, college basketball, which were the most profitable teams against the spread in the last 10 years? And some of these will surprise you. For instance, in hockey, the Washington Capitals. If you'd bet $100 on every Capitals game for a decade, you'd be up $4,400. Now, you already know it's the New England Patriots in football because we've talked about it forever. But how about Major League Baseball? The Texas Rangers. The Texas Rangers were the most profitable team in Major League Baseball the last 10 years. $100 would have brought you back $3,800. Now let's talk about the least profitable. Fez, in the NBA, you guessed this correctly already on the phone the other day. Which was the least profitable NBA team to bet the last decade?
Yeah, the Lakers, and this makes a lot of sense to me because they're not just public, they're ultra public. The late David Stern actually, when asked once, who would he like to see in the NBA Finals every year? He responded, I'd like to see the Lakers playing the Lakers.
And as a result, they're expensive. If you're going to bet the Lakers, you're going to pay the Laker tax. If you'd bet $100 on every Laker game in the last 10 years, you'd have won 351 times and lost 416. You'd be down 82 units. That's $8,200 to $100 better. Case in point, you brought up the other night, the Phoenix Suns. They were leading by 33, and they were laying 11. They didn't cover.
Exactly right, because you're paying that point spread tax with the Lakers playing so well, and it got you in the Phoenix game, and then it got you the next game against the New Orleans Pelicans when the Lakers open up a 20-point lead. No good. Faded, only one by 10, did not cover.
And the point we're making here is this is the essence of sports betting and sports gambling and handicapping. Fez, as we talked about before the show, just because your team is prolific on the field and wins a lot, it doesn't mean they cover and they cash tickets for the better. The bottom line is you've got to do your homework, you've got to do your research, and find the great equalizer, the line. And so, therefore, what's the old joke? Good teams win, great teams cover.
And New England has been a great team, and a big part of that is despite being an ultra-public team, New England has done things that the Vegas wise guys did not pay enough attention to in terms of play calling, in terms of optimizing their chances of winning, and that's why if you'd blindly bet New England, starting with their first Super Bowl win, New England has covered 60% of their games. That's just incredible.
All right, two memorable events that took place last year. These have a context in terms of the world of sports betting. Last April, a bettor at William Hill plunked down $85,000 for Tiger Woods to win the Masters. That brought back a cool $1.19 million. Why do I bring that up? Because it affected how people placed wagers over the next three golf tournaments, the next three majors. People steamed Tiger, and the books got a lot of that back. Another memorable sports book event last year. Now, this didn't affect the sports books as much because of a thing called parimutuel betting, but you all remember the Kentucky Derby disqualification. The bettors who'd bet on Maximum Security, who looked like he'd won the race but was disqualified, backed him to 17th. Bettors lost a combined $9 million on that. because the favorite was disqualified in something called Country House 1. Only $500,000 was wagered on Country House. Now, as a bettor, Fez, before we wrap this segment up, talk about the importance of not overreacting. You might have had a bad beat today. You're going to get up tomorrow. How's that going to affect certain people so that they do something they wouldn't normally do, which could endanger their bankroll, or worse, they take a day off when they had a winner and they decided not to bet because they're punch drunk.
Yeah, now ideally you want to be that cornerback that's just gotten burned on a bomb and just be memoryless. Just put it out of your mind. If there's something to learn from it, learn from it, but then move on and pretend it does not happen, because I've seen this happen with gamblers many a time where, let's face it, they go on tilt. It was, I think, probably the best documentation of that in the movie Molly's Game. There was a character, Harlan, a really good poker player, who gets bluffed out of a pot, and all of a sudden he's not that tight rock winning poker player anymore. Harlan becomes a fish, all because of an overreaction to a bad beat and then not having the wherewithal to go home and get a good night's sleep.
We're going to talk about subject matter like this quite a bit over the next several months. We don't have 16 NFL games to break down. We're going to have an opportunity to get more pertinent subject matter, because our goal is to pass along pertinent information so people can make good decisions and responsible decisions with your hard-earned money. We still got to get to Buffalo-Houston. What happened today? Let's look back, analyze it, look forward. What do we learn as Houston visits Kansas City? And we look ahead tomorrow to Seattle-Philadelphia and Minnesota-New Orleans. He's Steve Fezzik. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted, so don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
We're back on Straight Out of Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. And I want to remind you that Straight Out of Vegas is brought to you by Discover. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all the cash back you earn at the end of your first year automatically, with no limit as to how much we'll match. Millions of people a year are getting their cash back matched. Discover cash back match. What are you waiting for? Learn more at discover.com/cashback match. Fez, there was another game played today, and it was an overtime game. Very entertaining game if you're a football purist. What was the narrative going into the game? Well, I thought, for my money, it was a situation where I believe Buffalo needed to take advantage. They had the fifth-ranked pass rush. We all know that Deshaun Watson's been hit more than Rocky Balboa this year. He's been sacked 49 times. Houston's also got a leaky O-line, and the question is, could Buffalo take advantage of that and get to Watson? Yes, seven times, but on the eighth time, somehow he escaped, pulled a Superman play that Dabo Swinney likes to talk about, and the next thing you know, the Texans, the only playoff team with a negative point differential in this tournament, they beat Buffalo, a team that was 6-2 on the road, who frankly played well enough to win. They go home, and Houston goes to Kansas City, where I fear for their life next week, quite frankly.
Yes, the number one question I had coming into this game was, could Buffalo get after Watson again? So Buffalo team, good pass rush, number 12 in the league in sacks, number 10 in the league in getting in terms of sack percentage. And frankly, last year, Buffalo had no problem getting to Watson, sacked him seven times. Yeah, Buffalo lost that game, but that's because Nathan Peterman threw a pick six at the end of the game when the game was tied. So with Josh Allen, they were well positioned to win this game. And frankly, I think this is one that Buffalo just let get away.
You know what? And I really want to give a tip of the cap to Josh Allen. I cannot yet say he's a quintessential prototypical NFL passer, pocket passer. He's serviceable. Not a great passer, but he's a great NFL playmaker. Give the young man, he catches a touchdown pass, threw for 264 yards. And I got to tell you, even though he's not the most efficient passer, Josh Allen managed to take advantage of a suspect Texans defense. And Fez, this is where I want to go with this, because as you look ahead to next week, they got a few days to clean this up, and I don't think they can. The Texans, their defense ranks last among remaining playoff teams, or actually any of the playoff teams that were in the tournament. Their pass yards per game that they allowed, 268. Last, Josh Allen proved it, 264 yards today he had. Passing touchdowns allowed this year, 33. Last, did you know the Texans had 20-plus yard completions per game. They averaged surrendering 4 per game. And again, the only team in the tournament with a negative point differential. Aren't they in huge trouble next week?
I really think that they are, and the line opens up Kansas City minus 8.5 hosting the Texans, and frankly, if anything, I think that that line is cheap. Let's face it, the Texans, they did just enough to win, but they were this close. They were a whisker away from getting blown away in this game, down 16-0. And I'm still trying to figure out. Singletary was having great luck running the ball for Buffalo. He finishes with 58 yards. He only gets 13 carries, and he was really good out of the backfield, caught 6 passes for 76 yards. Why they didn't hand the ball off to Singletary more in the second half, and frankly, they didn't even have him in the backfield most of the time. And why is Frank Gore, geriatric Frank Gore, that the announcers were just gushing over, why is he getting 8 carries when he's so much inferior to Singletary? I can't understand it.
Two names I'm going to invoke looking ahead to next week. One, J.J. Watt. Now, I don't know how he did it. He tears his pectoral muscle, and that's a 4-month minimum rehab. He had surgery, I think, 8 weeks ago, and he's back in a playoff game. You know, you can poo-poo. He made some key plays that elevated his team. And with J.J. Watt on the field, opponents were only completing 59% of their passes. Without J.J. Watt, opponents were completing 66% of their passes, and he was good against the run in terms of when he's on the field, allowing opponents 4.1 yards per rush. Without J.J. Watt in those last 9-10 weeks, Houston allowing 5.3 yards per rush. And on the other side of the ball, if Houston has a snowball chance next week in Kansas City, they're going to have to be able to run Carlos Hyde effectively. I thought they were average at that today. I thought the key to the Texans today victory would have been to, again, utilize and run Carlos Hyde effectively, so that would force the Bills to defend the run and cover DeAndre Hopkins straight up. I can't say that they were real successful at that.
Yeah, Hopkins went 6-for-90, so basically met expectations over the course of the season. I'll say this.
It's all in the second half when they were down 16 points.
Yeah, so Hopkins was looking like he was going to go under. His overall number was around 80 yards, so he did wind up going over that number. But I can tell you this, both Watson and Carlos Hyde struggled when they're running the ball. They didn't put up big yards, although Watson did have some key runs and, of course, tremendous escape on what should have been the 8th sack in overtime, getting away. I still can't understand how he didn't go down on that hit.
I'm with you. That's a mind-boggling play, similar to the Eli Manning play in the Super Bowl to beat New England. One final thought on this. The Buffalo, you know, tip your cap, Buffalo. You had a good season, but your offense only managed 19.6 points per game this season. Sometimes the stats don't lie. They put up 19 today. Up next, we've got to get to Seattle, Philadelphia, and your favorite Kirk Cousins, Minnesota, New Orleans. We're going to really take a deep dive into those games. But first, well, let's go to the man who supplied Santa Claus with socks and sandals this year. It's Brian Finley with the latest.
That is right, Bernie. Hey, what's going on? Yeah, Tom Brady stood at the post-game press conference on Saturday, refusing to clue us in on what his playing future might be. He did budge a little bit by saying he's pretty unlikely to retire after the Titans derailed his Patriots in the AFC wildcard weekend 20-13 in Foxborough. Tennessee running back Derrick Henry on his 26th birthday piled up 182 yards rushing and a score. Henry divulged his team's approach afterwards.
We knew what type of game this was going to be. We knew we were coming in a hostile environment. We knew the distance between or a different team in the playoffs. But we just had to play our game. Don't worry about the outside. No, just focus on what we need to do.
Henry's heroics took the pressure off quarterback Ryan Tannehill, who passed for only 72 yards, 1 touchdown, and an interception. Earlier on Saturday, the Texans horrified the Bills 22-19 in overtime thanks to a 28-yard field goal. The kick came about after Deshaun Watson was able to elude a sure sack and find Tywan Jones for a 34-yard pass play. Houston head coach Bill O'Brien flattering Watson after the game.
Deshaun Watson, you know, there were a lot of, give Buffalo credit, we didn't protect very well. He got himself out of some major jams. He made some huge plays. The play to Tywan at the end obviously was unbelievable, but he made a lot of plays throughout the whole game. He's got a huge heart. He's been winning his whole life, and he knows how to win. He knows how to win, and there's not too much more you can say about it.
Watson finished the game with 247 yards passing, 55 yards on the ground. He was sacked 7 times. Get that man an ice bath as we send it back to Bernie Fratto and the Straight Out of Vegas crew.
Hey, Brian, quick question for you. A lot of folks feel the Wicked Witch is dead. I'm not a Patriot hater. Are you glad they're out, or what are you weighing on the Patriots?
Bernie, so I grew up in San Diego, and there were a lot of grudge matches between the Patriots and the San Diego Chargers when they were in San Diego in the playoffs. And so, yes, I am happy to see this thing start to dismantle. I would love in my lifetime to see a championship, let alone what the Patriots have done. So I'm simply jealous.
All right, fair enough. Appreciate your candor. Folks, what does it mean when Geico says just 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance? It means you probably should have gone to geico.com 15 minutes ago. You know, Fez, since 2003, in the playoff wildcard format, at least one underdog has won outright in 12 of the 16 years. Also, the wild card round has produced 9 Super Bowl winners, and in the last 14 years, 6 Super Bowl participants came from the wild card round. Don't answer now. By the way, the last wild card team to win the Super Bowl were the 2012 Baltimore Ravens. I want to start with the Minnesota-New Orleans game. That's the first game tomorrow. And if I were to ask you which team in the tournament, if I were to call you this morning before anything kicked off and said, which of the teams in this tournament do you think is the most likely to possibly join one of the previous 9 and win the Super Bowl, which would it have been?
The New Orleans Saints, currently my number one team in the NFC in terms of my power ratings. And the reason that they're my number one team is that, think back to the San Francisco game, coin flip game, 46-48. Kittle makes that great play on fourth down. If they stop Kittle, then the Saints are 14-2. San Francisco's 12-4, and we're not even having a conversation. It's just consensus. Everyone would say, oh, clearly the Saints are the best team in the NFC.
Well, I think Drew Brees gets the headlines, but you got to give it up to that Saints defense as well. In 2019, they're only allowing 91 yards per game on the ground. That's good for fourth. They've protected Drew Brees well and Teddy Bridgewater. They've only allowed 110 quarterback hits the entire year. That's good for fourth. And here's a key. On third down percentage, they're making teams punt 66% of the time. That's good for fifth. They're also 7-1, the Saints, at home in the playoffs since 2000. Fez, 721 days since the Minnesota Miracle or the Minneapolis Miracle, whatever you want to call it. They're 2 years removed from that. Does that factor into your handicap tomorrow?
No, because these two teams played last year. So if ever there was a time that I would factor it in, it would be the first meeting afterwards. New Orleans won that game in Minnesota 30-20. So that, if you want to play the revenge card, I think it has to be an immediate revenge from last year, not in this game.
I'm totally with you. By the way, Mike Zimmer, 62% as an underdog in his career. He's beaten the Saints, Zimmer, 2 of the last 3 meetings. The Saints will feature a healthy Dalvin Cook tomorrow. That's a good thing because it seems like Kirk Cousins is much more comfortable and that Viking offense is far more confident with Dalvin Cook in the lineup. However, juxtapose that against the fact that the Viking secondary has some key injuries. And in the last 5 weeks, here's the problem. The Vikings have to go up against Drew Brees tomorrow. And in the last 5 weeks, Fez, Drew Brees, 16 touchdowns and 0 interceptions. How in the hell does that Viking secondary navigate that?
Yeah, and the best thing that could have happened to Brees is having Bridgewater take over for 5 weeks, perhaps. It makes me think back to that Brady year where Brady got suspended for 4 games, threw 28 touchdowns, 2 interceptions. Well, Brees, since he's come back, has 25 touchdowns and 2 interceptions, so almost the same as Brady. And for a veteran quarterback like that at 40, maybe having 5.5 weeks off was the best thing that could happen. But I will say this, the Saints' underlying offensive stats for the year are not as good as they would have been had Brees played all year long, because obviously Brees is significantly better than Bridgewater. Bridgewater's a capable starter, and Brees is a top 5 starter. Did want to say one thing.
Go ahead.
You mentioned a healthy Dalvin Cook.
Yes.
Is going to play. I don't know.
He's not healthy. That's semantical.
Yes.
Is he really healthy? He's playing.
He's being forced into action. He's missed the last two games. Remember that Packer game, the Vikings needed it like blood there. So that was a really important game. So I have concerns about Dalvin Cook being healthy. And I also have concerns about Adam Thielen, who has disappeared since his hamstring injury earlier in the year. The last four games for Thielen, he's got two bagels and he's got two poor games. So the worst four-game stretch that Thielen's had in a long time. This is a guy who was putting up 100 yards each and every week early in the year last year for eight straight weeks, and he's become a non-factor. Is Thielen healthy? Is Dalvin Cook healthy? Kirk Cousins may have to do it on his own. That scares me.
When I say Dalvin Cook healthy, it's in the colloquial sense. He's playing, he's dressed. They'll shoot him up with Toradol. Did I just say that? I know he's not really healthy, but let's talk about the handicap of this game specifically, because I'm not giving a best bet this week, but I am telling you I'm involved in this game. I'm involved on the dog, and I'm involved on the over. Let's start with the over. This looks like an over to me. You got two great offenses. The game will be played indoors in carpet, perfect conditions. Points per game, Minnesota ranks eighth. The Saints rank third. Red zone percentage, important. If you don't think that's important, ask the New England Patriots. The Minnesota Vikings rank sixth. The Saints rank fourth. Sacks allowed. Both of these teams do a pretty good job of protecting their quarterback, so they have time to navigate, time for plays to form. Fifth, Minnesota ranks in protecting Kirk Cousins with fewest sacks allowed. Drew Brees and the Saints, even better, they rank third. I like the over, and I like the dog.
You know, I lean to the Saints. I'm going to tease the Saints with the Eagles, tease them through those key numbers of 7-3. I will say this, if you're a Viking backer, you got to be happy with the start time. 1 o'clock Eastern, this is the sweet spot for Kirk Cousins. It's been well documented, and our own Mackenzie Rivers has done the research on this, and I know Jonas Knox and RJ Bell have been talking about this all year long. Kirk Cousins is a creature of habit, and he loves for the routine to be there. So when a game starts at 1 o'clock Eastern, if you blindly bet on Kirk Cousins on those start times, you cash 2/3 of your tickets. If the starting time is any other time, you only cash 1/3 of your tickets. So to summarize, Kirk Cousins is the best covering quarterback in the history of the NFL as long as the game starts at 1 p.m. If it does not, he's the worst covering quarterback in terms of any quarterback with a big sample size.
And what time does the game start?
And the game starts at 1 o'clock Eastern.
Darn. What a coincidence.
Kirk Cousins is very happy about that.
Up next, we've got a game that is somewhat making history in Las Vegas in terms of the one-sided action. I will explain. Want to hear something amazing? Discover matches all of the cash back you earn at the end of your first year automatically with no limit to how much will match. Millions of people a year are getting their cash back matched. Discover Cashback Match. What are you waiting for? Learn more at discover.com/cashbackmatch. Seattle, Philly, the whole town's buzzing about it. We'll tell you why. I'm Bernie Fratto. We're coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. This is the pregame show you always wanted. So don't go away. You're listening to Straight Outta Vegas.
Straight Outta Vegas!
We are back on Straight Outta Vegas, the pregame show you always wanted. I'm Bernie Fratto, coming to you live from the Geico Fox Sports Radio studios. Before I go any further, I want to thank my broadcast team back in Los Angeles for all the great things you do. Chris Perfett, Eric Roberts, and Brian Finley turning all the dials, keeping us glued together so that we can deliver this fine product to a grateful nation. Fez, one final game on the dock, but it's a big one. 87% of the tickets are on Seattle. That is historic. That's the most one-sided action on any playoff team since 2003. A couple of sports books exposed. But you still got to play the game. And by the way, this also falls into an earlier category that I talked about at the top of the show, having to do with NFL quarterbacks making their playoff debut. Tomorrow, Carson Wentz falls into that category. We'll see what happens. Now, these two teams just played a few weeks ago. Seattle won 17-9. In terms of the total amount of points scored, I think it's going to be about the same. But what jumps at you about this?
Well, what's interesting is that 87% of the tickets are on Seattle, and yet the line is dropping. Seattle was a 1.5-point favorite all week long, and now the line is down to pick them. So the very biggest bets are coming in on Philly.
Mm-hmm.
And I agree with that. And let's go back. You referenced it. These two teams just played 6 weeks ago. Seattle was a small favorite. Seattle won the game, but they were +3 in turnovers. So what has changed in the past 5 weeks since that game? I'm going to make the case that Philly has played a whole lot better. They basically had four straight games, had to win them all. Wentz won them all. They were like playoff games, and Philly covered three of them. Seattle, by contrast, has played four games. They've been awful. They're 0-3-1 against the spread. They're 1-3 straight up. And, I mean, look at some of these games. They get crushed by the Rams. They get crushed by Arizona at home. A nice loss against San Francisco, but the Carolina game stands out. They only beat Carolina by 6, Bernie. Since Ron Rivera got fired, Carolina has mailed it in. That has been an absolutely atrocious team that has not covered a game since the Rivera firing, but they hung in there against Seattle. I don't like anything from Seattle. And let's look at the injuries. Yes, Philly has significant injuries. Yes, Philly has a new injury. So they have a Pro Bowl lineman that's out. That's an additional injury that they did not have all year long. But Philly has dealt with injuries all year long. Seattle has had to deal with recent injuries. And I would explain that that's why they're playing so badly. Obviously, the three running backs going out. But now they've got their left tackle injured as well. So I don't like anything I see with the Seattle that, frankly, is a completely overrated team that was 10-2 in close games. I don't see anything separating these two teams. And Philly's home. I think Philly wins.
I see one thing separating these two teams, and that's the quarterbacks. But hold that thought. I want to address some of the things you talked about. You've got to be – full disclosure, I'm on the under 45.5. Well, actually, not true. I got it at 45. All right, full transparency, folks. For you knuckleheads on here, think we're not transparent. You know who you are. All right. The last time a team lost their two final regular season games, and yet they go on the road as a favorite. Now, that's Seattle. I don't know when that happened last. Doesn't matter, but that jumps at me. That's a serious red flag, right, to me.
And, well, it's okay to lose to San Francisco. It's not okay.
No. You lose two of your final games, and you go on the road as a road favorite in a playoff game? That's news to me.
I'll have to do the research on that, but I think it's a great point that here's a team that's leaking oil completely, and now they got to fly all the way across the country, and they open up as the favorite. Actually, they didn't open as the favorite. This game's been flipping back and forth. Philly opens as the favorite. Money comes on Seattle initially, but now the late money, the smart money, is coming in on Philly.
Okay, and you talk about Philly, and I'll tip a cap to their four-game road to glory as they finish the season. Let's look who they did it against. I'll take a page from your book. Twice against the stinky New York Giants. One of the games, they were trailing 17-3. It took overtime. Another win against the moribund Washington Redskins. Come on, man. And then the underachieving Cowboys. I'll give it. They won all four. But there's some things to look at here. Russell Wilson, 4-0 straight up and against the spread in his career versus the Eagles, winning by an average margin of 8-plus points. But this is why I say you got to be civil to handicap this game. Because, frankly, the Eagles have been pretty good on the big stage. Their last five playoff games, they're not only 4-1 straight up, they're 5-0 against the number. Now, this is Carson Wentz's first time starting in the playoffs. He's making his professional debut in the playoffs. Can he take advantage of a Seattle defense? Ranks 27th in pass yards per game. Ranks 29th in sacks. Ranks 29th in yards per play. Which quarterback do you trust? That's where this game comes down to.
Yeah, and I will trust Russell Wilson versus Carson Wentz, but I'll trust the Eagles as a team to be able to win clutch games.
Will you trust Pete Carroll in the wild card round? He's 4-1, 4-1 against the spread. Average margin of victory, 9 points. Two of those games were double-digit wins.
I don't trust Pete Carroll when he gets it first and goal on the one. I've seen him blow two big games already with that.
Oh, my goodness. So if you look back at the Week 12 game, if you want to glean anything from that, Seattle averaged 6.1 yards per play, Philly 4.8. Seattle ran for 174 yards that day, but those two running backs will be playing tomorrow.
Yeah, Chris Carson is nowhere to be found, nor is the backup or the third string running back. So major problems without Penny on pro side.
Here's the damning statistic. Seattle turned the ball over two times that day in Week 12. Philly turned it over five.
I'm happy about that. So if Philly doesn't turn it over five and the turnovers are equal, Philly should be able to hang right in there. Bottom line, this is my best bet. I'm on the Eagles here. Seattle's overrated. They're 11-5. They've only outscored opponents by 7 points year to date.
Excellent stuff, Fez. You're not wrong about the Seahawks. They lost three of their last four, including Arizona, which has to be a bothersome loss. I'm sorry. And what did that do? It dropped them from potentially the number one seed to the number five seed. And what do you like to talk about? The trend line, The trend line is not good. I agree. I'm not betting the side on this game, but I do like the under of 45. Quick, we just got a couple seconds. Your best bet tomorrow?
Best bet is the Eagles to win outright here against Seattle.
Good for you. Okay, and I do like the Vikings plus the points and the over in that game. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Straight Out of Vegas. He's Steve Fezzik. I'm Bernie Fratto. Enjoy the games tomorrow. Make them a winner. Next up, from Nashville, the man who brings it strong, it's the Jason Martin Show.
Straight Out of Vegas!